Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Things don't stay the same forever, and that's a good thing. Different states and territories will continue to roll out different ways to enable first home buyers to get into the market sooner. And for New South Wales at the moment, they are looking at different ways for first home buyers to get in above the already set stamp duty waiver free threshold. That's a mouthful. These types of state and territory grants are not new, and both state and federal governments have been stimulating the economy and throwing cash at first home buyers for over 20 years. Many may see this stuff as virtue signalling to the electorate, particularly at a federal level, as many first home grants and programs might be capped at, say, 10,000 people, whereas others may see it as a legitimate help. I guess you could ask someone who has had benefit from these types of grants or schemes to see if it was a help or not. Wherever things may land in your state, one thing remains. You are the only one that has the power to spend less than what you earn, get out of debt, sacrifice the short term and save as much money as possible for buying your first home. And as you know, we can't do this podcast without our show partner, TAL. The connection between your financial, physical and mental health is greater than you may realise, which is why when TAL looks at health, they take a holistic approach, because the balance of physical, mental and financial health is key to overall health and well-being. That's TAL, T-A-L, ensuring this Australian life. How can you best protect your family and future against the unexpected? What are the benefits of insuring your income? If something were to happen to you, do you have a plan in place? At TAL, they want all Australians to enjoy the freedom that comes with being financially healthy. And these are some of the questions that can be addressed to help you set strong financial foundations. To learn more, head to tal.com.au, or if you are after a financial advisor to help with your foundations in relation to insurance, you can head to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help. And before we really rip into it, I'll see you guys at a capital city near you for our national tour. Tickets are still available in many cities. I'm Glenn James. You're listening to My Millennial Money. John Pidgeon, My Millennial Property. We're talking stamp duty versus land tax. It was a recent announcement a few weeks ago in New South Wales to incentivise first home buyers to get into a property with an alternate way to pay tax, effectively. Do you want to maybe have some opening statements? I think it's important to note that we will keep high level, we'll keep conceptual, because realistically, this is only going to be relative to probably 3.5% of all home buyers in New South Wales, and particularly because we've got a national audience. I just wanted to zoom out, John, and just talk conceptually about this, and because often, I don't know, what's your opening statements? And then I'll tell you my opening statements.
Seems like a debate, doesn't it? Yeah, look, it's been coming for a while. They've been talking the momentum up to try and create a national system, which I think will maybe come, or other states will adopt this New South Wales way of doing things. But I think basically what's happening is the cost of stamp duty is quite high on the way in. So they believe that it's stopping people from buying their home, whether that be a first home or subsequent home. Because of that barrier and that cash savings ability. And so what they're saying is, well, you can have the choice of paying your stamp duty still or paying land tax. Now, what land tax is, that's always been around, but it's never been calculated on your principal place of residence. It's only for investors. So it's the value of the land, not the overall value of the property, and that's what you need to be clear on. The Office of State Revenue in your state will give a land tax value, and it'll be on your rates notice, and that's what they'll use to calculate your land tax value. So, and we'll do an example soon, Glenn, which will outline the pros and cons. But this option now, or an opt-in land tax for new homeowners or first home buyers only at the minute, by the New South Wales governments will basically come into effect. It's up to $1.5 million in property purchase. So anything over that doesn't apply. And the land tax amount will be $400 annually plus 0.3% of the land value, not the purchase value. So again, we'll go into an example as to what that might mean. But generally speaking, like housing growth historically, there's three, I suppose, types of buyers that push the growth up or the property prices up. And the biggest one is the upsizers. So we're upsizing to something bigger or better or location-wise or dwelling type. Then we've got investors that also help it out. And then at the bottom rung, we've got the first home buyers. And their concern was, in the last 20 years, home ownership in Australia has dropped from 67% to 61% in the 20 years for people under 35. So they're saying, well, it's now not a fair system to allow first home buyers into the market, so let's create an incentive for them.
I want to just, good comments and all that stuff. I want to just reiterate that, particularly New South Wales, if you're purchasing your first home under $650,000 at the moment, you can still get the exemption anyway. So we're kind of saying that it is for those first home purchasers who are buying over $650,000, aka most people anyway.
Yeah. Look, I...
You know, sure, there's regional areas that you can still get some pricing and, you know, probably the odd apartment maybe.
I think it's... In places. I don't think it'll make a dint at all, to be honest. Like, my preferred method for first home buyers would be to raise that 650. Like, if we raised it to $1 million, which is now the norm in Sydney, would that change the outcome for first home buyers getting into the market? I think absolutely. But replacing one for the other, I mean, obviously for the government, they're not in it to lose money. So, but I think it's going to take a while to recoup if someone does choose land tax.
My opening comments would be that I welcome any discussion or anything that can make it easier for people to buy the first property. Mm-hmm. Simple as that. So I think for something to change, something has to change. And it's been the Premier in New South Wales, Dominic Perrottet. It was his kind of pet that he wanted as Treasurer. The previous Premier, Gladys Berejiklian, she went, nah, go away. But now he's the boss. He's getting what he wants. And this is loosely paraphrasing from my observations. I think, you know, stamp duty, it's probably okay back 50 years ago when homes were $100,000. Like, sure.
Yeah.
You know, flick some dollars to the government. There you go. See you later. But I think it's a bit of a canary in the coal mine just to see how it lands in real world. And it is a good nod to first home buyers. You talked about revenue hit to the New South Wales government. You know, stamp duty is like, I think it's like a fourth of total revenue to the New South Wales government. Yep. And it might be similar for other governments around the nation, except Western Australia, who probably is just all iron ore. but I really think if you look at a business case, longer term, if the government moved everyone from a stamp duty to a land tax, there's probably more money in it. Because you think as a business, right, you just think, remember like 8 years ago when you bought the app and it was like $8 once off cost, there you go. Now it's $3 a month and they get you on the drip, right? So if you're on a monthly subscription for anything, usually it's more beneficial to the supplier. So I think long term, it could be more, and I'm not an economist or know anything about money when it comes to any type of federal or state budgets, but conceptually, longer term, it could be a winner. So I'm for it as an option. And I will say, like, as part of this discussion today or any discussion that John and I have, if we say something and you don't agree with us or it's not in line with your ethical profile or whatever lens that you're listening through, that's actually healthy and okay. We are not the true north for money commentary in your life or in Australia. And if we are, we're in a lot of bloody trouble. So it's healthy to not agree with us, but just don't get rage bait and like think the world's ending and all this stuff. Like, it's actually okay if you disagree, and it's healthy as part of being a grown up and civil discussion.
Absolutely.
So based on that, I actually think if you're a first home buyer and this is an option for you and you're buying over that threshold of $650,000, I think it's a no-brainer. Absolute no-brainer.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. What do you think, John?
I actually agree, but the number or the percentage that actually take this up I think will be small purely because of property prices in Sydney, which is majority of New South Wales population. So let's go to an example.
Yeah, and I just thought I would add, I don't know if I think I may have said it in my opening comments, but it is a bit of a canary in the coal mine because often, you know, there has to be leadership with anything. And if I can take a quick tangent as an example, this whole climate change thing and the contribution that Australia has to global greenhouse gases is barely a drop in the ocean. But there has to come a time where it's like leadership and we're going to do this, because what happens is other people can look to you and go, well, they did it, so why can't we? And that's the same as Australia might look at other smaller countries who have had social policies or educational policies or anything like that that have worked in their countries or cities. So it's, yeah, all I'm saying is other states might be looking at how it works out in New South Wales. And that's why I wanted to more discuss broadly, John, the concepts of this once-off cost, because it may move into all properties. I think they're not going to knock on your door tomorrow and say, you've owned this house for, like, where I've moved into in Merriweather Heights, the lady next door, she's lived there 50 years. They're not going to knock on her door and be like, oh, hey, by the way, next year you're paying us $3,000 a year. Like, they're not going to do that. This is going to be a systemic generational change in policy that's not going to happen overnight if it happens at all. So
yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that. I think the key part of what they've mentioned, and just for everyone's sake, it hasn't actually come out yet, so there's no report to say this is exactly how it's going to work, but they've mentioned that the property's not locked in when the ownership changes. So you get the ability to actually choose again when you buy it off someone else who's maybe chosen land tax. You might be able to, you can choose to say, well, I'm paying stamp duty. So that's an interesting one, because the lead up to this was quite the reverse. It was going to be locked in, and maybe that may be different for other states if they adopt it. But that's a bit of a game changer, that one.
Yeah. So show us an example, because I think there were some comments in the Facebook group and they were like, this is a bad deal and, you know, all that stuff, Trump, Chapter 7, Art of the Deal, all that kind of stuff. But there's some miscommunication. So, John, if I purchased a home for $800,000, it's not 0.3% of the $800,000.
No.
Forevermore, amen.
No, it's not.
So have you got an example for us?
Yeah. So if we're buying an 800K property in New South Wales, normally we would be paying $31,500-ish in stamp duty.
Which is such a lot of money.
And it's worse in Victoria. So for the Victorians listening, you want this to be adopted for you as a first home buyer as quick as possible. And I know you're going to an election later in the year, so nothing will probably be done between now and then. But I think, yeah, $31,500 you have to come up with over and above your deposit to get in as that we see it today. If you choose the land tax option, you no longer have to pay that $31,500. What you will pay is $400 a year plus 0.3% of the land value. So just to make our numbers easy, we'll just cut it down the middle and say $400,000 is the land value on this 800K purchase. $400,000 times 0.36 is $1,200 plus your $400 is $1,600. So that's going to take 20 years of $1,600 a year before we get to that $31,500. Now, there's obviously some variations in all this because land value generally increases each year. So if it rises to 600K, then we're up for $2,200 a year. So now that's 14 years instead of 20 years to get back to that $31,500. So you're right. Conceptually, the land tax option is a financially better outcome for someone that's going to hold that property for anything less than 14 years in that example.
That's right. And I will say, like, you know, it's really hard. Like when I was doing financial advice, I wouldn't do any financial projections more than like 4 to 5 years because I just wanted to illustrate, look, if we do these type of strategies, these are the tax impacts immediately in the next 3 to 4 years because, yeah, it's cute that we can run a scenario for 20 years and it just looks all perfect. But we know that in real life, we have a thing called reality and real life and things happen. So I think it's too simplistic to just put, you know, $31,000 divided by $1,600. But I think you're right there. If you're like, okay, well, this is a serious option. If I don't have like broad intentions of being in the property forever, if I don't, and I was actually thinking as well like that, sure, if the land tax ballooned to $2,000 a year in 3 years time, for example, right? If you're still on the same salary in 3 years, well, there's might be a bigger like issue as well. You're a first home buyer means you might be younger, you're growing in your career, there might be more money coming in. So I just think it's actually a no-brainer if it's an option for you to do. And the good thing is, John, we know, and we're going to the second half of this episode, we're talking about townhouses and buying those to live in because there was some good fodder in the Facebook group around that. A lot of first homeowners might buy and be out of there within 7 years anyway because they've started a family or they want to get the 3 dogs and 8 kittens and all that stuff. So it's really going to be easier to transition to the next property up without another impost of $30,000.
Yeah, just for me, we mentioned the 650 threshold in New South Wales. As first home buyers, we don't need to pay the stamp duty. There's really this, so from 651,000 to about 1 million. We don't see too many first home buyers buying their first home that costs over $1 million, I don't think. Well, not that I speak to anyway. So we've got this small window of 650 to 1 million where we say, yep, we're going to choose the land tax option and live in it for the next 5-10 years before we upsize. We're still going to be financially better off. I think it's a really small percentage of what the property purchases will be in New South Wales. To your point about the revenue, in 2021, stamp duty made up 25% of New South Wales' whole revenue.
25, was it?
So
yeah.
One in $4 basically, which is a big amount to play catch up on, isn't it, over the next 15, 20 years. So it really is a long-term effect. But the other point is if we're in Vic, and I mentioned Vic because it's got the highest stamp duty percentage in the country, you'd be paying $45,000 in stamp duty on that 800K purchase, not 35, not 31, sorry. So it's a big difference, isn't it? So, yeah.
Well, I think it's a good discussion. Again, you know, there could be a new government next year in New South Wales, and I saw a quote by Chris Minns saying, well, if you want to help first home buyers, why don't you just make the scheme more open without introducing a new tax and complexities? And he's right, but also I think the Liberal Party's right as well to say, well, structurally something has to change. I think everyone's right. It's just a matter of, you know, as a society, what do we agree on and what's the better outcome? But I just think, you know, if you are you know, outskirts of Sydney or maybe around Newcastle here. Hello, everyone. Yeah, it's good to be in Newcastle. Love it. I'm enjoying Convoy Commune. I'm enjoying Tallulah. Some great little cafes. Also like Mockingbird on Beaumont Street in Hamilton.
Shout out.
But yeah, if you are, there's a bit of a tangent.
You've been ever since you moved there, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, I have actually. So everyone's like, oh, have you, how's the move going? I'm like, well, I moved in, spent a week painting and getting Blue Bay ready. Then I got sick. Then I had my wrist surgery and I slept in till 10:30 today because I'm still sick. But yeah, other than that, it's great, guys.
Yeah. So what you were going to say is regional will benefit.
Regional will benefit. Outskirts of Sydney will benefit. The Gong. I just think it's a no-brainer and gets you into that home sooner because the older I get, the more I realise life is more about the money. And if it means I can be smiling at, if it means I can buy a home and call it home, and make it mine and do all that, well, sure, I'll just cash flow some land tax for the first few years. There could be an argument if you don't have a spare $1,600 to $2,000 a year, you shouldn't be buying a home anyway. That could be an argument. Not sure. Probably won't be making it because of the rage that you'll all tell me. But yeah, I just think let's see where it lands. But just on any final closing thoughts on the stamp duty land tax thing?
No, not really. I just think, yeah, it'll play out. We'll get the rules and regs on what it can and can't do for us. But I'm waiting for that next piece of what does it mean for everyone else that's not just the first home buyer. What does it mean for the upsizer? What does it mean for the investor? It'll all play out, won't it?
Yeah, but that hasn't even been on the lips of anyone talking about it in this, I guess, next term of government or in the immediate future about this being a broader structural change. I think the discussion needs to be had because if I already own a home, well, what if I want to move? Well, I don't. Oh, it's going to cost us $30,000 to move and upsize, or you know, if there's a downsizer, oh, that could be $30,000 or $40,000 of capital that we've got to pay. Like, it's just, sure, if you're downsizing from a $2 million property to $1 million property, shut up. You can afford $30,000 stamp duty, which is fine. It's all well and good to be brash like that. But it's the emotional impediment.
Yeah.
That people, because if you are a pensioner, oh, that's a year's worth of my income. So that's the dance, right? So factually, if I'm downsizing from 2 million to 800 to or 1 million, shut up. You can pay $30,000 in stamp duty. You've got the money.
Yeah.
That's the fact. But it's the emotional impediment that, oh, that's going to cost me a year of income if I do that.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that there's a supply-demand issue in Australia right now that's not going to go away anytime soon, and who's going to contribute to the demand? Well, it's first home buyers and it's investors. So I think if there's new houses built, for example, upsizers may be going to buy it, but they're only trading one for one, aren't they? So it's really okay. Investors can buy more property. First home buyers can buy their first property. So that's helping with the demand. So that side of the coin needs to definitely be addressed. Canberra's had this transition from stamp duty to land tax for the last 20 years, and it's got another 100 years to go before it fully plays out. Like, I don't know if it's worked or not worked. I think everyone's confused in Canberra at the minute, or ACT, should I say.
But yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's our commentary on it.
Okay, we're going to have a break, but we'll be right back after this.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click get help.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Okay, it's that time again. We ask you, the My Millennial Money community, it's you guys who run this show. We just facilitate it. It's your show. We just get all the money that it makes.
Glenn does.
Shut up, you get some. What's a practical thing that you've done with your money in the last 12 months that brought about encouraging results? So, I love reading these because this is what it's all about. The Facebook group, it gets chatty in there. And thanks everyone for being polite in the Facebook group. Thanks everyone for not just coming in and spamming us with crypto schemes and all that. It's rare that people report posts because I've spent a lot of time creating the culture of that group that we've got a zero tolerance policy to like people advertising their own stuff.
Except for you and I.
Just want to keep it, except for us. That's right. We reserve the right to advertise stuff to make money to keep this thing going. But yeah, I just want to say thanks everyone. If in doubt, read the rules. If you do have a post that has been removed, there's a reason why. Don't take it personally. Also, if you are wondering why your anonymous post hasn't been approved, it's not you, it's us. We get hundreds of those every day and we don't allow all of them. We might only put one or two through a day because we don't want the group to be an anonymous back room where it's got no soul. And you know, there's other Facebook groups where they moderate every post. Like you've got to apply for every post. We've got a free posting rule. So best way to get your post up there is to just post it in your name and that's not moderated. Okay, so the last 12 months that's brought about encouraging results. Have you got any there that you can see, John?
Jay Saini, regular listener, invested in real estate. Ha ha. Well, has produced a reasonable result in most cases, hasn't it?
Rachel Connard, stopped buying new clothes, except boring stuff like underwear, socks, innerwear, and going to op shops when I need a shopping fix.
Alan.
Yeah, that's good. I don't think we always need to buy new clothes.
No, you don't. Tanika Judge, prioritise debt, which now makes us totally debt-free, except mortgage. Feels good.
Alan Guy, I've been more deliberate about using the Honey browser extension and looking into the member benefits offered by my private health and car insurance provided. Yeah, and he was saying it's basically he's not a millionaire overnight, but it's the little things that we can control.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Speaking of little things, Ashley Moel, I haven't used Afterpay or anything like that since 2020. The last 12 months have been tempting, but I never gave in.
You. This is what we're all about, Ashley. Vicky Profit, given up smoking and invested half the money into raise each week. The other half is being saved as an emergency fund. That's awesome. Look at that. Like that cigarette cost, They're like $55 a packet or something, aren't they, John? How many are you doing a week now? A carton?
I wouldn't.
Yeah, so John's paying like $500 a week in ciggies.
She's making a tidy profit.
Gabe Weber, stopped going to car dealerships and looking at upgrading the car. Realized we are good at the moment. That's a big thing as well, isn't it? We get bored sometimes and we think, oh, maybe a new car would help my boredom and make me feel a bit nicer. Yeah. But your car's fine in most of the instances, everyone.
This is a really good one from Jess Huxley. Had an emergency fund, thank God. Just spent 3 months off work without paying for a knee reconstruction. Had no leave due to original injury. Didn't lose my house. How good is that?
Yeah, it's awesome. Knee reconstruction. Ouch. Well,
not that part, but the emergency is solid.
Totally. Rachel Henschke, finally got our life, trauma and TBD insurances after listening to Glenn's episode with Phil Thompson. Highly recommend Phil and his team. Awesome peace of mind. That's so good. And I will actually really, really encourage you, if you're listening and you've... That's John's phone vibrating again. Flipping hell, I'm going to shove it up your phone socket.
Sorry, mate. Sorry for running the business.
That's right. I want to just encourage everyone, if you've got a young family, you've got young kids, and you don't have death cover, please, please sort your money out.com, click get help. I will introduce you to Phil at Sky Wealth or someone that suits your situation. Please get at least death cover, you tight ass. Look after your family.
Absolutely.
And I say this because yesterday I was at a funeral for a 46-year-old father of three.
Wow.
Shouldn't have happened. Now, thankfully, I set up the death policies and the family's going to be fine financially. Mm. Could you imagine if one of you died prematurely today and you had three kids and you had a mortgage and you had expenses? The bills don't stop. AGL don't come and say, oh, sorry, you died. We're going to stop charging you electricity now. Like, it doesn't happen. And this is what it's all about. You just have to at least get death cover to look after the people you love.
And it's tenfold when, in that example, that happens because kids aren't old enough to look after themselves and someone still has to work, which means you need an extra person.
So the surviving spouse can stay at home and be a good parent. Anyway, I just get so enraged when people do not get some basic death cover because they're tight. Well, say that when, you know, you're dead and you've left your family behind because you're a tight ass. Like, anyway.
Amanda Muscat finally forked out the money to see a psychiatrist for an official ADHD diagnosis. This will make me money in the long run, being able to reach my full potential. Thank you for, I suppose, coming forward and admitting that as well. That's a big step as well, isn't it?
Catherine Mack, being flexible with my budget, seeing my budget as a living document and updating it regularly matched with my needs and wants happening in life. Yeah, that's right. Like, our finances they're agile, they're moving. Nothing's ever fixed in stone and you need to make sure your budget is living. John, let's do two more, then we can move on.
Melanie Brooks, cash flow, accepting I had an issue and now I've paid off $21,000 of debt. A lot of it came down to being frank with myself, but also automating everything and having every dollar do a job. So good to have Frank in your life.
Gabe Weber. Is that a second Weber? Oh, no, Gabe. Gabe's put a couple of posts here in this post. I'm just reading them. I'm like, Gabe Weber, oldest child, started private high school this year, $8,000 a year. Have been saving ahead for a while. No stressing having to come up with it now. Yeah, there you go, Gabe. Good on you. And Gabe, you better have bloody life insurance or I'll come over there and tell you myself. Yep. Was I a bit rude in that segment?
don't know. The listeners will tell us.
Yeah, they will.
And so they should.
There's just nothing more real in life than going to a funeral of somebody who has died prematurely.
Yeah.
I don't know. If you can tell me what is, I'll listen. But to me, it was just a real wake-up call to me, and particularly because I set up the policies, it was just that, wow, this is why I did that. Like,
And I think
it's just a humbling experience.
Yeah, being raw.
Professionally.
Yeah. Being raw for you obviously exemplifies the moment, doesn't it? But, yeah, it's pretty important. And I don't think I actually realised how important it was until I started having kids.
All right, Nathan, take us out of this segment. So there was some good chatter in the Facebook group from Amy Lipscomb. She said, "Hi everyone, thoughts on townhouses, pros and cons. We are first home buyers, not looking to spend too crazy on a first home." So, John, I wanted to first and foremost just talk about townhouses. And there's a lot of chatter in the Facebook group about this. You know, as the cost of property increases and everyone wants to live near the beach or close to the city, I think townhouses are probably more, I don't know, everywhere and more popular than they were 30 years ago. I don't know. I was only a child 30 years ago, but you were a fully grown man.
So. I was 15, mate. Oh, still growing up. Yeah, look, it is a good topic, and it's interesting at the moment because housing prices have just escalated in the last few years, haven't they? So no longer can we just roll straight into a house in a lot of cases in an area where we want to live. So what's the next best option? Well, if you want to live in your own home, then we've got to go to something cheaper, which invariably is a townhouse or a unit or apartment. But in a lot of cases, a brand new townhouse, usually townhouses are two-story, usually, not always. If that's the case and they're brand new, the actual dwelling size is sometimes bigger than a house, right? But the land component's smaller. So the outlay, the price to buy in, may be actually similar to buying an older house on a bigger block. So that's the opening statement from me, I suppose, is are you using it to buy in a nice area, or are you buying a townhouse to live in a nice house where everything's reasonably new? Is it a short-term alternative to then upsize to our big family home with a backyard, or do we want a townhouse for the rest of our life because we're not having kids, we don't have pets, et cetera, et cetera. Plenty of things to look at, and there's a lot of comments in there, isn't there? And there's no right or wrong, but financially there is a history to show what is going to be the better outcome, but a lot of it has to be lifestyle-related decision-making as well.
Yeah, I think particularly around townhouses, it's almost that if you want to quote unquote rent vest, right? Because you can't afford to live where you want to live. So it might be a premium suburb and you can't afford to buy there. Well, you might go, okay, well, I can't afford a freehold property, but can I afford a townhouse? That's kind of the next lower thing as a bit of a lifestyle play, because I mean, I can share the story around my townhouse purchase, but just for those, you made me think of this, John, when, for those wondering about, you know, double story homes and the costs and all that, you know, out where Rachel from Spear Home Loan lives.
Yes. You know, I reckon there, you bring that up once a month.
Pretty much, because it's just, I'm so want to live out there in a nice property. Yeah. But next time you drive through there, there's a huge property. And they got this like double story McMansion on it. And I was driving through there with Dirty Mike once. And I'm like, bloody, they got the nicest estate there and they've built this McMansion double story thing. Why wouldn't you do this big thing? And he's like, it's cheaper to build a double story. You've got half the concrete in the slab and half the roof.
Yes.
So, and I'm like, oh, yeah, there's a point. So that's kind of, I just that lateral thinking that I didn't realize. Rather than building the big kind of singles level, you know, two wing kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's often why double stories and townhouses, not only a space related thing, but a cost thing.
Yeah. But, well, and just before we move on to something, I think the key in thinking, well, if I am upsizing, what's my resale going to be like? And we've built townhouses in the past to live in and to invest. And the key mistake that we made with our first one was for a two-story townhouse, it didn't have a bedroom down on the bottom level. But the land component made sense to maximize it by having two-story townhouses on it. Right, but double garage, no living down, no bedroom downstairs for the elderly that don't have to or want to get upstairs. So that's, yeah, there's little components like that that come into play, whether it's single level or double story.
Yeah, so I own two townhouses, and the first one that I purchased at Blue Bay, I bought that brand new, and it was kind of weird, like, Blue Bay, when I was younger, I was like, oh, it's my dream suburb. I'd love to live there one day, you know, probably when I'm like 65 and got the money to afford to move in there and all that stuff. And I kind of, long story short, stumbled over this townhouse and managed to buy it new. And yeah, it was just really amazing. Right place, right time, right suburb and all that. And for me, with townhouses, the one that I've got, well, both of the townhouses that I own, they're at the rear of the block. So that was important to me because I didn't want cars going past my window. That was just one thing. Both of the townhouses I've got, they've got external access to the backyard. Now, the other ones on both lots don't. So
you have to go through the house to get to the backyard.
Got to go through the house, yeah, which is annoying if you wanted to own a mower or whatever, or I don't know. It was just more just like if I have a big party, I could just open the back gate and people can just come in and like it's all good.
10 people in the backyard and have a party.
That's right. No, I think I've had 40 people there before.
All right, so question before you go on. Mm. Way back when you bought that Blue Bay townhouse, brand new or close enough to, what would you have, what you could have bought as an old house on a bigger block and compare the values today?
Yeah, I reckon there was probably another, well, no, I paid, I think, $540 for it.
Right.
And I reckon freehold at the time was closer to $800.
Right. Even an old crappy.
Yeah, shirt. Yeah, yeah. Mm. But I think it's just been valued for maybe $1 million.
Yeah.
And I don't know what a freehold's worth in that area now.
Close to two.
Yeah. Yep. So for me, when I was buying it, I knew that it wasn't forever and that, and I just hope my story here just encourages other people thinking around townhouses, if it's going to be for you or not. I knew that it wasn't going to be forever. I set up the mortgage that was an offset, principal and interest with an offset account. I didn't pay any money into that mortgage more than the minimum monthly amounts. I just have money sitting on my offset account. My offset account is my cash hub as part of the Glen James spending plan. So I knew that it was going to be some type of stepping stone because it was effectively, what, two streets back from the beach. I knew that I would never sell it.
Yeah.
Like I've got no reason to ever sell it. There's bugger all mortgage on it. It's just, yeah, I'm just never selling it. It's still in good condition, new, and it's got good rental yield now.
So I think for Amy and her question, she doesn't want to spend too crazy, in her words, on her first home. So going back to your situation, well, that's the 500 to 800 story, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah, and it was more for me starting my business at the time when I did purchase it. It was more the lifestyle play where I'm going to be head down in the trenches building this business. I and my personality and my mental health was probably worse than, in fact, I don't think I was medicated when I bought that house. Like, I needed that security that I wasn't going to have be evicted. I wasn't going to have to get moved. Oh, you got 2 months to move house or 3 months. Like, for me, it was hugely lifestyle. Like, I needed that certainty. Yeah. Where now, fast forward, I'm renting again, and I will do an episode in the coming weeks about the whole rent besting journey. But so, yeah, the shoe really did fit. And it's like anything when it comes to purchasing our home to live in. Like, forget what everyone else flippin' says to you. Like, sure, if they say, oh, did you know that that house, you know, it's actually... it's half burnt down, so don't buy it. Or you might go, oh, you're right, what am I doing? But if someone's like, you should do this because it's their experience, or no, you shouldn't do that because we bought a full normal house and you shouldn't buy a townhouse, well, tell them to get stuffed because it's your lifestyle decision, right?
Yeah.
But I think we're going to talk about some pros and cons here, but it's so important to really understand going in all of these ramifications and going in thinking that I won't be able to have everything perfect, so I have to choose my battles. Yeah,
that's right. I've actually been doing a lot of clarity calls on this exact subject of, well, should I buy a townhouse or buy a freestanding house further out for the long term for my first home, regardless of whether I'm in first homeowner concession, stamp duty concession category or not. So, yeah, it's... you're right, it's personal situation, but it's also understanding not to listen to the noise, isn't it? So much noise out there.
And I think, John, this conversation is more for the people wanting to buy a townhome to live in as opposed to investment.
That's right.
Because there's just, you know, if you want to chat to John about investing and all that for your own personal situation, do a clarity call with him, because it is just so many different moving parts. Like, one of the first clients I had in 2010 owned a townhouse in just outside of Brisbane. And for the 10 years that they were clients, it was worth less than what they paid for it. Yeah. So just because it's capital city, just because it's a townhouse, doesn't mean squat. And that's why, you know, I just want to have this conversation about to live in.
Yeah, but I think the conversations I'm having, they are a lot of first home buyers going to live in it, but then they're going to turn it into an investment. So they're sort of making a non-emotional financial decision now. I'm not too fussed as to what I live in, but I just want to get into the market and then propel to something bigger.
Yeah. One of the cons for me with townhouses, and I wouldn't personally buy one to live in myself, would be in a complex that probably has over 4 or 6 of them. Only because the driveways are so small. You know, the one that at Blue Bay, there's only 3 in the complex, all down one side. It's easy.
Yeah.
They're both, you know, the front 2 are owner occupiers. This, like, not going anywhere. So there's not a lot of movement. They're just, that was a non-starter for me. I'm not living in a complex.
Yeah.
That, and for some people, that doesn't bother you. So just work out what bothers you with where you want to live.
But I think it's what bothers you, and also the implications that come with more in a complex. So if you had 10 or 12 in there, you've got essentially a large community area that's shared, haven't you? Like, that driveway is shared. So that's the difference between freestanding and townhouses. You've got that driveway, the common areas that are all shared, and the more people that share them, the more potential, what would you say, complications may arise.
Yeah, but you just get storm in the teacup crap and, you know, there's a comments like, oh, I buy Torrens title because you don't have to pay strata. Well, just on the Torrens title, it's not part of the strata plan. But this whole paying strata thing, you actually still, quote unquote, pay strata when you got a Torrens title, don't you, John?
Well, you do, but you're the sole decision maker in the Torrens title.
That's right. But the cost, like, you've still got to pay for your building insurance, you've still got to pay for external maintenance. Yeah. You've still got to pay for cleaning of your own driveway if you want that clean. So the costs are going to be there. And that was kind of one of the in terms of, I wrote down the strata on the cons list. If it's too big, it's going to be too annoying because you've got strata committee, you've got bloody storm in a teacup, all these big issues that aren't actually issues for people that have got a freaking life and, you know, all that stuff. But the other side, and the good thing is when it is big, it's a formal strata plan. There's usually a third-party company that's doing the books and the meetings and all that. The other side, when it's too small, that can also have risks. So, for example, the three are at Blue Bay that I own, we don't have a formal strata manager.
No.
Like, it's just us. Insurance comes up. Hey, ladies, insurance has come through. You guys happy with this? Yep, and we pay it. Mm. We've just had the driveway resealed and painted. I think that was $6,000.
Each?
Yep. No, no.
Between the three.
Bloody should have. Yeah, well, that, and this is, and, well, actually, let's go there. So it was $6,000 for the three of us. So we all had to cough up $2,000. Now, what if one of the people don't have $2,000? Yeah. And where it's the other two, so there's three of us, what if two of us agree on it, one of them don't have the money, what do you do?
Yeah, it's that's why there's so many fence disputes around the country, isn't it? It's like, well, we need the fence yep. replaced. One can pay for it, the other can't, but there's an obligation for both too.
So this was the, and this was the other little risk with it, and this is the dance, the driveway. It had that rough kind of coating on the concrete. So that's all flicked up and, you know, got chatty and whatnot. So we got a quote. I think it was like $16,000 to totally come in, remove that seal, get the concrete back to bare concrete, and then respray the rough crap on it.
Wow.
And then repaint it and all that stuff. It's like $16,000.
That's a Blue Bay tax for sure.
Well, but then we got this other quote for $6,000 just to repaint it and seal it, quote unquote. And you've seen it. It looks great. But it's starting to flick again and there's our parts that we can now see the concrete again. So we've got to get the guy to come back and go, well, you said it would seal it and it hasn't.
Yeah.
So there can be some annoyances with that.
But that could happen in a normal driveway as well, but it's you to pay for it and you to make the decision on, isn't it?
That's right. And if there was a larger body corporate with a formalised structure and we're all contributing $400 a quarter to the sinking fund for long-term maintenance, cost usually isn't an issue. And if someone is behind, there's mechanisms to formally chase them.
Yeah, and I suppose there's financial and there's lifestyle, right? I want a bedroom downstairs, or I want a double garage, or I want a gate access to the backyard. But then there's financial, which one's going to give me better growth? An old house on a bigger block, freestanding Torrens title, or a strata titled townhouse. Now, history would say that it's probably going to be that house on a free Torrens title, but yeah, it's not always possible because of finances. But I think the so many pros and cons of making the decision. But one of the big ones, if you're going to a unit or apartment, you're going to have other complications that are far greater than a townhouse. Like,
yeah, and
if you're going to have a complex of, say, 15 or 20 and it's high rise or medium rise, you're going to have a lift, right? Now that needs maintenance. You're going to have a lot.
But you've got the scale there of owners that are putting the money in. Like, it's all scalable, right?
Should be as well, but the strata costs can be way too high for what they should be. So you need that as a due diligence check, and we're not talking about units and apartments, but sort of comparing, we need to understand if there is any strata or community title and what does that mean for you as the owner. Because on the way in, come auction day, you can be just looking at the contract, yep, all good, and you might not have been told by your conveyancer that this is going on.
I've got the funniest story, and maybe if we get time for an after party, so much for like deciding that, oh, we'll keep Tuesday episodes to 35 minutes, but most people want them under an hour. So. Got the funniest story from a strata meeting with that other unit complex that I bought. But back to the cons, because we can talk about the pros, but these are the things like you, your wall in your bedroom may be, sure, it could be double brick and fire to the roof and all that stuff to the tile line or the tin line, but you're sharing a wall with another person.
You could drill through to their bedroom.
So, yeah, it could be double brick, but I knew someone once and their bedroom was opposite, well, their bed laid up against the bed that was two double bricks go, and hearing someone banging 25-8, I'm sure they were having a good time, but that's not conducive to reading a nice book in bed or
meditating.
You know, the after work little bang bang. So it's, you know, your neighbors
and being. Is this the after party or the
main I don't know, but it's a party. I just said bang bang, but whatever. We're all animals.
So, yeah,
but like, and so the neighbors thing is a big issue. You know, and weirdly, like moving here, because I'm now in a freehold, big house, it was kind of. You know, every couple of days I'd see Ede next door and she's in her 80s and, you know, she basically downsized to there and, you know, she's healthier and fitter and got more friends than I do. She'll outlive me. But it's kind of weird. Like, I'm like, oh, I don't say hi to my neighbor every couple of days anymore.
Yeah, so some people like that, don't they?
Yeah, I just noticed it yesterday. I'm like, oh, it's kind of weird. And But on the flip side of that, what if your neighbor didn't respect social norms like you did, like loud music at 2 a.m., like Harley Davidson's revving at 10 p.m. in their little garage?
But unless you're on acreage, I think you can cop that either way with townhouse or freestanding.
You can, but it's just more in your face if you've got a townhouse probably in a complex.
But Louise mentioned here, it's a pretty good point, depends on what you want in life. She seriously think Australia as a whole needs to evaluate the great Australian dream of a standalone house. So many freestanding houses are built to within centimetres of the boundary with minimal yard. So that's a really good point. The difference being is that you've got your driveway that's exclusive to you. Even though you are centimetres away from the next home, you've got your own driveway. So I think if you had a townhouse complex that was on a corner, for example, you could have your exclusive driveway, you've got your small courtyard, and then the other townhouse is facing onto the other street. Like, that's a great outcome.
So as part of the national tour for investors, I forgot to kind of add this in, you're doing an advanced property investor masterclass.
Yes.
So mymillennial.money/tour, you can get tickets. They're $350 or $349, so under $350, literal. Or if you want to bring your spouse or partner, there's a discount for the two of you. You're going to talk about these mini developments for investors and it could scratch the itch. And this is why we can't go down the investment rabbit hole and talk about your own personal situation because it's all so different. You could build a duplex yourself on a corner block, have your own driveway and have the rental out the back. So is this the crap that you'll be covering at the Advanced Property Investor Masterclass?
100%. It's not crap, by the way, but that's what I will be discussing, yes. So, yeah, talking about best financial outcome with the money you've got to spend from a development point of view.
It's a bit of a cake and eat it too scenario, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and it works so well. And just to finish on that, that's a great upsizer example is, well, I can start with that and then build to something greater because I've maybe made some growth on that development.
Mm. One of the interesting things with, and we'll move on to the pros because the cons, you know, we've talked about the strata and too big's annoying, too small, there might be some risks. You don't have a freehold. The neighbours could suck and you don't have any access to your backyard. And I think, you know, there's probably in that strata thing the risks and financial and, you know, navigating all that. Are there any other cons or downsides to townhome living that you can see, John? Or
I think it's really the layout. you go and buy something. And people, I think people in the comments section spoke a lot about layout, make sure you've got the right layout. Well, what is the right layout for now versus when I have kids? And I think it's the big squeeze of, well, I started off with a unit, then I got a partner and a dog, so now I need a townhouse. Now we're going to have kids, so now the townhouse is too small. Now we need to upgrade to a home. Can I afford it in the same area? No, so I have to go out a suburb or two. And the journey continues, and that's why that upsizing is so popular. But the layout is lifestyle-wise, but it's also financial as well, because once a townhouse is built, conceptually, you can't change it. There's not too much that can be changed, especially if it's two-story.
Every wall's load-bearing.
Yeah, that's right. And you've got a limited amount of land. So what's been built is basically it. You can only make cosmetic improvements.
Just on, I guess, the just kind of tacking in pseudo-investment play, but the second townhouse that I did buy, no intention to ever live in it. I did buy that brand new, and a lot of times people say, oh, you don't make money on investments buying them brand new, and you don't make money on townhouses buying them as an investment. I mean, it's done very well. There's only two in the complex. They're both pretty big. I bought the rear one. It's got external driveway access to the backyard. It's got the master bedroom and an ensuite on the ground floor. Upstairs is a bedroom and two bedrooms and a lounge room area. Like, it's actually a really big property, and it's done very well. So I don't think we can make blanket statements ever that you don't make any money out of townhouses as an investment or even to buy and live in, because you make the money at the buy. And you know, if you bought at the top of a market in your city, well, sure, it might go backwards or sideways, but the house next door might go sideways as well.
Yeah, I think the key component...
Cold showers needed sometimes.
Yeah, it refreshes the mind, doesn't it, cold shower? But I think it needs to be noted that generally the townhouse does have some exclusive land to it, whereas a unit or apartment, you might be on top of someone else. And the land you really can't see, touch or feel. So that's where the value is in the townhouse purchase from a financial perspective. And Jane Davidson mentioned in the comments, we opted to go small first and bought a townhouse at the end of 2016, October last year. Managed to use the equity to buy our forever much bigger home. We're now about to sell the townhouse and make double what we paid. So clearly there's money to be made there. If they had bought a home at the same time, interesting to see what the outcome is now. But look, doubling your money is a pretty good outcome, isn't it?
Yeah, and Misty Lee Holden, she says that she got a three-bedroom, two bathrooms and a toilet downstairs. Well, that's exactly the same as I've got, a Blue Bay. Yes. And it's got the nice courtyard that she's got. Look, I think, and someone, and she said it's got low body corporates and it's in a group of 10. You know, someone says, what's a low-body corporate? Well, it really depends. If it's a 70-year-old building and there's a special levy because, you know, we have to replace the roof and it's 200 grand, well, you're going to have to pay for that.
Yeah.
But if they're newer buildings and, you know, the only body corporates we've really got, you know, and it's all self-managed, is the insurance and the common area, like front lawn.
Yeah. So is yours Torrens Title in Blue Bay or Strata Title?
No, Strata. Yeah.
Okay. So in the masterclass around the country, I'll also be talking about Torrens Title townhouses versus Strata Title as well, which is can be quite a difference.
Yeah, cool. So just on that, like if I've got a Torrens Title townhouse and it's a common roof line and there's a bit of tin, I've walked on the bit of tin or something, or there's a leak on my roof, I've got to pay for that because it's above my head.
Yes.
And then if it's in between both of them, well, we have to go, well, it's 50-50.
Yeah, well, generally there's no in between. Like there's a firewall So it's got to be the firewall if it's going to be in between.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, but that's what we're saying. Yeah. Like, it's literally if it's on your side, above yours, you're responsible for
that's
it.
That's right, yeah.
But you've still got considerations. Like, if you want to paint it, well, if you want your front of your home purple and your neighbour who's Torrens doesn't want to take it from the beige, like, you've still got some physical lifestyle considerations that do you want to piss off your neighbour or do you want to live happily ever after?
Totally. And a lot of this is common sense, isn't it, as well? So, yeah, you've got to factor all that in.
Okay, let's finish up with some pros to the townhouse. I've written down some. I'll just smash through them. Maintenance is low. Like, little yard, had the mower guy come in, mow it, $20. He would hedge it. He'd clean up. I didn't own a mower. I would do some superficial gardening myself. I had my little garden out the back and my pots and, you know, I might weed the lawn, but I didn't mow it. So that the maintenance was really, really good. The entry price, you know, we know that it's going to be less than a home, a freehold home. I think the pros are they're good for first home buyers. They're good for young couples or downsizers. It could be good for possible security if you're in a bit of a bigger complex and there's a gate. So, but having said that, ours doesn't have a gate. And I did get broken into while I was overseas once, but I left the door unlocked. So there's that. You know that China trip that I paid for you to come on, John? Yeah. It was very expensive in the end.
I was meant to lock the door before I left, was I?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it was very kind of you, actually, that trip.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
It was, Shanghai. Yeah, so
and
you finished?
Oh, yeah, and then the last pro, topical, it could be a smaller percentage of land tax if you take that route with the government.
Hmm. Yes.
So if you buy that townhouse over 650, first homeowner, go the land tax route, not the stamp duty. We know that, you know, if it was a block of four, your land tax is a fourth of the total. So, you know, it's it is horses for courses. And I think this type of stuff, you don't have to overcook it. As a first home buyer, you know, it's daunting because you haven't done it before. But remember, I was going to buy one on I was going to say your street name, but I won't do that. On your street before this one, and it's the old one at the crest up there on the left on your side. Yeah. I was going to buy that, but that was like a 60s build. It was pretty solid, but I had my cousin who's a builder rock around and he goes, mate, at some point that whole roof needs to be redone. So the older, like anything, the older you buy, the more risk of maintenance. Just as simple as that.
Yeah, human beings included. So that you pretty much ticked off on a lot of the positives. The big one might be for someone older that they've got a sense of community and safety, and you may have mentioned that a little bit, but being in that group feel I think is a big one maybe as you get older. That can also be a negative if you've got shitty neighbours, but yeah, can be a comfort thing, and the low maintenance upkeep on backyards and whatever else. So yeah, but
how's this? One of the tenants I had in at the other property, the owner at the front called me one day, and they're like, they drived in with a van, and there was white paint dripping out of the van, and they've driven off and just left it. Clearly have seen it and they've been home since and have just left it. It's like, what type of grub are these people? Yeah. I think it was the same people who said they didn't have pets. And then when they moved in, the plumber called me, goes, oh, do you know they've got like cats? I'm like, well, they've been there a week and they said they don't have pets. And they told the plumber that they were minding the cats for a friend. I mean, and to be honest, I don't heaps care. Like, one of my properties, they own a pet, and I'm as far as I'm concerned, as a property owner with tenants, if you want to have a pet, that's fine.
Yeah.
If it wrecks it, the place, you'll just have to pay for it.
That's right.
Pretty simple.
And some kids can be dirtier than pets.
Yeah, so I don't really care about pets.
No, that's fair. Oh, well, that's a good chat about townhouses, but yeah, pros and cons of any decision and just our opinion today, isn't it?
Well, they're exactly worth what you paid for them out there. But will I buy another townhouse? Probably not, only because that's more of a diversification investment play.
Yeah, but I reiterate what I said earlier. As an ageing population in Australia, if you're looking financially, if you're going to buy one and it is two-storey, we want a bedroom downstairs, folks.
Yep. I love it. All right, guys, you've been real. Thanks for hanging out with us. Sorry you went a bit long today, / whatever, don't care. If you didn't want to listen, you wouldn't be hearing me apologising. So there's that. But seriously, guys, get along to our national tour. We are really keen to do this. It almost wasn't going to go ahead, but thankfully our good friends at ING and BPay have come along to help. And like full disclosure, like each individual city actually runs at a loss. Because to spend, you know, $7,500-$8,000 just on the venue hire and some food plus the PA, you do the maths, you see how much we're charging for tickets. And because John likes to fly business class everywhere.
I was just about to say, like, your 7-star restaurants and accommodation that you dine.
No, we're reasonable. Honestly, we have the best time doing these shows and the live shows and meeting all of you.
Yeah, I love it.
Because this is a community-led, user-generated content podcast. We're just here facilitating, and that's why I'd like to reiterate, anything that we say that you don't agree with, that's totally fine. We're not here to convince you to anything. This is just our view of the world, and that's why we get a lot of different variety of guests on and different voices. So, yeah, it's been great. I always go into these thank you tirades like it's our last ever episode because I'm just so thankful.
Yeah, you are. Grateful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good.
All right, I'm going to go get a turkey sub, I think. Might go over to Katara.
You go do
lunchtime.
That.
I will, John. All right.
Thanks, guys.
All right, see ya. Bye.
We acknowledge the Awabakal people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast. My Millennial Money supports a variety of charities, and we encourage you to consider giving as part of your overall financial strategy. If you would like some giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to mymillennial.money/charities for more info. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.